Pushkin.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Andy Mitchell could be called a doctor for business. But he's not the kind of doctor who does annual wellness checkups. Nope. Andy Mitchell's specialty is more like emergency triage for very, very sick companies. You know they're bad off because of what people tend to call them at this stage, distressed assets. Andy's firm, Lantern Asset Management, buys up businesses in immediate need of cash and willing to sell at bargain basement prices. I wanted to talk to Andy Mitchell because I'm pretty sure someone like him will be involved in some future stage of the company at the center of my next book, the now extremely distressed crypto exchange, FTX. Welcome to On Background from Against the Rules. I'm Michael Lewis. It's possible that no one will be able or willing to revive FTX, which is now in bankruptcy. But I figured Andy Mitchell could tell me how a rehabilitation scenario might go down if a willing buyer came along. One thing I'm finding out about these background interviews, I just get interested in them in their own right, apart from FTX. Andy's world intersects with huge stories in the news, but also junk food you probably ate as a kid. When something goes belly up, people seek him out. I asked him how he knows when to get involved.
I like to say, look, we identify companies that have a reason to exist, and the reason they're not performing is something you can identify that can be fixed and understood.
So you find the sick and the wounded, and you try to fix them. But not all the sick and the wounded, just the sick and the wounded that have hope.
I said I do a lot of gap analysis, right? What should be happening and what is happening, and can you identify the gap and a type of understanding of... You know, and it, as you know, a big part of restructuring is, do people really understand where they are and where they're going? Because denial is not just a river in Egypt, right? It's the easiest thing to do as a business leader is to say, no, it's the economy, it's COVID. I mean, it's the first thing that investors don't like when management just blames every external factor they can think of. And they say, well, do you really understand why it is you are not performing, and can you deal with it?
And do the things that you buy, are they invariably in bankruptcy, or are they sometimes not that far gone?
So a lot of the companies that we get involved with are definitely troubled. The legal term bankruptcy judges like to use is, you know, you've entered the zone of insolvency, right? So if you're in a situation where you're unable to maintain the status quo or to realize your business plan, That's usually when we come in. And honestly, the one defining thing that brings us in most of the time is first thing I ever learned out of business school, cash is king. So when liquidity becomes tight, that's usually when people start having to look for different solutions. If you have a lot of cash, it's amazing how long you can languish in non-performance land. If you've got time and liquidity, you can work through a lot of things. But as soon as people start cutting off that lifeblood of any company, which is the cash it needs to pay its bills, they come to you really enter a different stage. And that's, unfortunately, most of the time we get involved, whether it's in court or out of court. It's the time at which the company realizes that in the not too distant future, they're not going to be able to make their payments as they come due.
What would have been the first case? What's the first time you saw something you said, this sick and wounded business can be repaired and I'm going to buy it?
You know, I was a company called Interstate Bakeries. If you remember, they made Wonder Bread and Twinkies and whatnot. And right around the time that Michelle Obama correctly came out and said, hey, we need to worry about childhood obesity, they had $3 billion of sales, but really started to have a top line issue.
What does that mean, a top line issue?
I remember I was sitting in the room the first time I met with the CEO, and of course, there's a plate of Twinkies in the middle of the room. And he said, you want a Twinkie? I said, no, absolutely not. He goes, that's the problem. Not enough people eat Twinkies. So it really, it was fundamental. Now, the real problem with Interstate Bakeries was actually, if you look behind the scene, they were making $3 billion, and yet they were losing $100 million in cash flow. And it's because it cost them so much to distribute their product. It was a highly unionized workforce. And the problem was is that they had grown through acquisition. So they'd acquired something like 50 bakeries in the United States. But each time they acquired a bankruptcy, they simply adopted or absorbed the existing union contract. So when I sat down with the Teamsters, even they were troubled. They said, you know, Andy, here's the problem. We have 50 different contracts in this company. And so if you were to draw a line on where we want to settle, you've got guys that have a better deal, guys that have a worse deal. So it's really difficult to herd cats here. So, you know, that company had a top line problem that could be managed. It had a cost structure issue that, again, you had to work through the unions and whatnot, but could be managed. Because when you looked at their competitors, you know, they were doing 10, 15% margins, and here we were at negative margins.
There's something disturbing about the idea of every time someone eats a Twinkie, the company that makes it is losing money, too. Like, is that good for anybody? Right? I mean, they're not even making a profit off the Twinkies. They're sort of subsidizing the Twinkies. That's news to me. So this is the first problem you deal with on your own?
Well, this is the first major target, you know, that came up. Now, that probably was a bad one to bring up because, unfortunately, it went through not only a Chapter 11, but it went through a Chapter 22, which is the joking term in the industry for a second bankruptcy, and then finally it liquidated.
So in the end, it didn't end up working?
It did not end up working. The guys that eventually bought it basically did what had to be done, which is they shut the whole thing down, tore up all the union agreements, and then once everything was still, they took the brands, restarted it, and made a huge profit. But unfortunately, it took using the bankruptcy code to jettison all those union agreements and everything else, because it just, no matter how deep, and that's a whole different series, is, you know, dealing with collective bargaining and how to make it a win-win for everybody.
So that wasn't, but that wasn't you. You didn't end up buying the Twinkie company.
No, I didn't.
Hold that thought. After a short break, we're going to hear all about a distressed asset Andy did buy, and its distress, which was considerable. We'll be right back.
As listeners of this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert teams of nerds have the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet, but you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
I'm back with Andy Mitchell, Managing Director of Lantern Asset Management. In this next part, I ask him about his most famously distressed asset. Want to guess what that was? Here's a clip from CBS This Morning.
In 2017, New York Times reporters Jody Cantor and Megan Toohey uncovered stories of Weinstein's alleged sexual harassment, igniting the Me Too movement.
Let's talk about your experience buying Harvey Weinstein's company. So tell me how you stumble into that in the first place.
Well, in that one, I had a pre-identifiable problem, right, which is head of management issue. I jokingly say, well, how did you get into Weinstein? It's, well, they had a management problem.
So he gets charged with sexual assault. And then what happens?
When the New York Times dropped their bombshell story, right, it put in place a number of events that quickly escalated beyond control. Now, if you look at the Weinstein Company, it had a lot of problems before the New York Times did that story. Its liquidity was strained. It had a serial borrower of money. And even though it had a lot of successful movies, the unsuccessful movies were what was bringing it down. It'd be like talking about a mutual fund saying, well, they have 10 great stocks. I'm like, yeah, but they have 50 bad stocks. So unfortunately, you don't get to just talk about the 10 positive ones, except maybe in Hollywood.
So were they losing money?
Oh, they were already insolvent before the situation with Harvey had erupted.
I didn't realize that. Okay.
The Weinstein Company. They're good at making movies, but definitely not great at contracts and accounting and whatnot. A number of different things were in disarray. But ultimately, what got me to the table was once the story broke, all the creditors started panicking. Because if Harvey was going to be removed from the company, what do you hate the man or like the man or love his movies? He was seen as the creative energy behind the entire thing. And without him, the belief was that there was no Weinstein Company. And so creditors started to pull back, not to mention with what was going on in terms of the negative reaction, the Me Too movement, this global movement, it also became toxic, right? First, there was a business problem. Then it became people didn't even want to be associated with it. They didn't want to carry the movies and television shows on TV. They were worried about people boycotting it.
And where are you physically when this happens? Where are you living?
So I'm living in Dallas, Texas, right? The last place you'd expect to find somebody to go to Hollywood and invest. We got a call from actually one of our limited partners called up and said, hey, you know, a partner of ours has a movie that's going to get caught up in this. How do we get it out of this process?
Oh, that was your way in. Someone called and asked how you could extract a single movie from the Weinstein Company. What movie was it?
It was called War with Grandpa with Robert De Niro. So it had not been released yet. And, you know, it was just a fear of the investor was, well, what happens if we get stuck in this bankruptcy and the movie doesn't get released? And, you know, you've spent all this money making this movie, right? You've got all this money on the table. In fact, there was 6 movies stuck during the period that we bought. Another one's called Upside. Great movie. Strangely about a turnaround guy. Bryan Cranston plays a turnaround advisor. It's about a quadriplegic. Uh-huh. So this was a movie that wasn't yet done, but they had put considerable money into it. And even though you had Kevin Hart, Nicole Kidman, a great cast, it became the cloud of uncertainty over the entire Weinstein, which is, what if America boycotts this? So the creditors, everybody was in this perpetual state of fear. And so we came in and ended up meeting with a couple parties that were said, look, this is a good business. It just needs a change of management. And we don't deserve to lose years and years of work as a result of what Harvey did. So there was a process. Can we do it outside of court?
Meaning, does it have to be thrown into bankruptcy?
Yeah, does it have to go into bankruptcy? Was the kind of question du jour. And most people would rather do a deal outside of bankruptcy. what they don't realize is it's actually a very highly effective tool in order to help the company get back on its feet. And it's, to me, it's the entire reason our bankruptcy code exists, is that a company that continues the going concern is most likely more valuable than a company that is liquidated and dissolved.
Which, so what did you do with Harvey Weinstein's business?
So I took the position early on with a number of the members of the board and the advisor that there was no way to buy the company outside of bankruptcy. And the main reason was is when you buy a company, it sometimes inherits all of those claims and all those legacy liabilities that exist at that time. And people were still trying to figure out daily, you know, what the liabilities were, who was to blame, how much what Harvey did infiltrated it, whether or not there was HR claims, whether or not there was an internal.
And if you bought it before bankruptcy, you'd inherit all those problems. And if anybody wanted to sue for anything Harvey Weinstein ever did, you'd be liable.
That was my position, because every single day at that time there was another claim popping up against the company, either non-payment or the victims, and so there was just it was like hitting a bee's nest. It's a swarm around this company of people making claims against it, and so it to me it was a classic. It needed to go into bankruptcy just to stop the clock for a moment, take a deep breath, assess what's there, and then reorganize the company.
What did you see in this company that was valuable?
The library. I mean, it was 299 movies that America loved, and actually loved worldwide, right? You had the Quentin Tarantino collection. You had movies like King's Speech. You had The Butler. You had Silver Linings Playbook. You had Project Runway television show. You had Yellowstone. And Hollywood took this position of, nobody's going to watch this again because of what Harvey did. Everybody's going to boycott it across America. And this is tainted goods. What they didn't realize is people in Kansas and Houston and Dallas, they didn't even know who Harvey Weinstein was to begin with. You know, as I said, you know, usually when the credits are playing at the beginning of a movie, most Americans are still getting their popcorn or getting their seat. The concept to me that people weren't going to watch, weren't going to watch Paddington Bear, for example, we bought Paddington Bear, that my daughter wasn't going to watch Paddington Bear because of Harvey Weinstein, it was just ridiculous. I said, you know, and I knew in bankruptcy, you could buy it free and clear of all the other claims, and you could separate the good from the bad, which is what bankruptcy at its heart it does to maximize value, is it lets somebody buy it without the worrying about, well, what about so-and-so, you know, gives them a format through the bankruptcy court in order to resolve their claims and disputes, and allows the company to go on and survive. So I said, if we can just get the library out of this alone, there'll be sufficient value.
Well, so tell me what happened in the bankruptcy. Like, how come there aren't dozens of people trying to buy this library, and how can you get it at a decent price?
In March of 2018, we entered a bankruptcy with the company, said, here, the company's filing bankruptcy, but don't worry, we already have a white knight. They're going to acquire the asset. I set up a company called Land Entertainment as the vehicle to come in and buy it. And the number that people love to quote is, well, what can you read in the bankruptcy court? So the bankruptcy court said I bought was a stalking horse for $289 million of cash. What people always forget is it's not just the cash you pay. It's also the liabilities you assume that matter. So with all the claims that we assumed and everything else, we're probably in the area of $400 million.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Did you assume any of the claims that might have been filed against Harvey?
No.
I'm just curious, what claims did you assume?
So what we were able to do is, and this is all very public. So we went in and said, look, we're prepared to buy all the assets for X. And here are the claims that we're prepared to assume. And there are certain claims that if you don't assume, you're not going to get approved as a stalking horse. So a stalking horse by model is to provide a floor bid.
You're the first bid in an auction.
I can always bid more, but you're not supposed to bid less as a stalking horse. So you come in with a floor bid and you say, here's what I'm willing to assume and here's what I'm willing to pay. And that bid gets put together as an order and then gets put out there for all the other bidders. So I came out in March as a stalking horse with the company to say, hey, it's not going to be obliterated from the earth. There's a buyer here. They're going to hire the employees and there's going to be a plan. And then we entered the auction. What I didn't expect, and I may hold a record, I don't know, you have to check with your bankruptcy historians, 96 parties objected to my bid as stalking horse.
Why?
You know, when Meryl Streep files an objection to your bid, it tends to make news, right? A number of people objected saying, well, Your Honor, he hasn't said what he's going to do with my claim. He hasn't said that he's going to sue my claim. I don't think that he has a right to buy the movie without... So all those types of objections, right?
Yeah, so Meryl Streep's in a movie and she's got a piece of the movie and she's still not seeing her cash.
And somebody told her, hey, you know what? It's going through a bankruptcy. Somebody's buying it. If you want to get paid or you want to make a claim, now's the time. Right. So there was a bit of a pile on. And a lot of it was because the records were so bad that they didn't even know. And to be honest with you, nobody had filed bankruptcy in this much of disarray. I mean, Weinstein had talent. They hadn't paid in 5 years. But it was unclear about, well, did he just give him another movie? What did he do? Was there some other form of payment? So it was there was a lot of noise around the case that got debated in a bankruptcy court about who had a claim, what the amount of their claim was, and whatnot.
You're getting an education in Hollywood.
Yes.
In the, what are your takeaways? As someone who's a complete outsider walking into this place, what strikes you? How's it different than you might have expected?
When people are losing money, the first thing they do is look for somebody to blame other than themselves, right? Yep. Whose fault is it? Why am I not getting paid? You know, who is getting paid? And so people start getting very upset about where they are in line, what claim they have, learn the difference between what they think they have and what they actually have in contractual rights. And in Hollywood, it wasn't just money. It was personal, right? So, you know, I say money is the root of all evil, but then you add fame and, well, the rules don't apply to me. I'm so-and-so. And it was interesting to watch Judge Walrath. Mary Walrath was the presiding judge who's been on the bench in Delaware a long time, very experienced practitioner. And people would come in and they kind of had this, do you know who my client is? And she was very like, I don't really care who your client is. The bankruptcy code doesn't have exceptions for, you know, Oscar winners. I'm sorry. So I think that was the most interesting thing and probably the biggest thing that we... And people are like, what'd you expect? I said, I don't know. I thought I was just going to buy a movie collection out of bankruptcy and do what I do.
Right, right. So what happened in the auction? Were you able to buy it at the floor price or were there other people who came in and bid?
I paid below what my opening price was, which if you'd asked me beforehand, I'd said, I've never seen that happen, that you actually, the stocking horse actually lowered the bid and still closed the deal. And there was a very tense point right before the auction because there was a number of guys bidding, but people were trying to come in and bid on individual films, right? Somebody wanted to come in and buy Django Unchained and Glorious Bastards, but they didn't want the rest of it. And so they said, well, I'll give you X million for that. And if you're a practitioner on the other side, you'd love to just put together the sum of the parts until you hit a bigger number. Well, yeah. I took the approach of, hey, man, I don't know what's good and bad. So if I don't get everything, I'm out, which upset a lot of people, right? It was all or nothing. But then what I realized is they couldn't even tell me the status of certain payments. They couldn't tell me certain claims. And it became a lot more complicated than they anticipated. There became a real question about whether or not they could deliver the assets to me under the terms that I had set out.
Sure. Because the claims were more complicated than they knew.
Right. I thought a real argument that they could not deliver the assets in the status that they said. So we basically said we wanted a massive purchase price reduction and they threatened to sue. There was a lot of back and forth in the press and, you know, people here's Wall Street coming in with this restructuring professional that's trying to, but I was just being, to me, a good fiduciary of my responsibility to my investors, which is, hey, if you can't deliver what I said, I'm not going to pay it. So we mutually agreed to a purchase price reduction, and then I closed.
What did you buy it for?
It was like a $25 million reduction off the top.
What's the most interesting claim you took on that you didn't expect to?
The biggest one that hung over in that case was, what about the victim's claim? What happened about the women that have claims, and who's going to pay that? I mean, you remember this time he was accused. There was no judgment against him. You know, it took 3 years for them to work it out with the court, what they got. But, you know, to me, that wasn't a position of a bidder to take. What was amazing is how many people said, no, you have some obligation to pay. But I said, look, I've got 5 kids, 2 of them are daughters. I'm not the one that's going to set an amount on what's proper for what allegedly happened. So we avoided it. But it was amazing how much it came back to us time and time again of, well, why aren't you assuming or paying something or doing something in that realm? And by the way, those victims had a voice in this case throughout the entire end. And, you know, the insurance plays into it. There's a number of things that come to bear when people are charging not just the manager, but with the company with the crime, which is, you know, again, an FTX issue.
Right. right? So I want to talk about FTX now, but before, just finish the Weinstein conversation. How's the company doing now? How did it work out?
I'm happy to say after 5 years, 6 years, you know, once we got, once Land Entertainment got outside of bankruptcy, we hired a number of people back. We cut deals with the producers and distributors. We released The Upside at the beginning of 2019. Everybody thought the movie would be boycott, did 130 million worldwide, did very, very well. Project Runway that everybody thought would kind of go down with the stream. We worked with Bravo to relaunch the show. So the companies, what I think should have happened is once you got outside the storm, you know, these are great movies and great television shows, and they went on to continue in success. So we've been very happy. The company's doing well.
On Background, we'll be right back.
As listeners of this show, you probably consider yourself pretty smart. But how smart is your wallet? When you're looking to upgrade your wallet, it's time to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert teams of nerds have the financial smarts to help you find the right financial products for you. Before NerdWallet, you might have paid for vacations with whatever was in your wallet, but you could have been missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table. Now you can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
I'm back with Andy Mitchell. We just heard how his firm dealt with one majorly distressed asset, the Weinstein Company, which is fascinating. But I actually called him to get his take on what the future might hold for FTX, another company that's sliding down the twin tracks of bankruptcy and criminal charges against its founder.
FTX valuation is the biggest question. And I think that was the case beforehand. There's a lot of volatility in this. You know, I try to explain to my kids, what's crypto? What's this? I said, it's digital gold, right? We've created a digital currency that has value. And the value of that has swung wildly over time. So I think that was the first time you'd invest in FTX, when it hit the wall and where it is now, is what is the underlying asset really worth? To value a movie is pretty straightforward, especially if it released in a box office, right? Oh, it did 150 yep. million. You can almost predict with science how well it's going to do on streaming platforms and whatnot. It just follows. There's a lot of data out there. Cryptocurrencies is a bit of a much wider swing, right? It's early adoptions yep. and early products. I think valuation is going to be the hardest part of this equation.
Yeah. I mean, he bought $5 billion worth of venture capital assets, like companies, pieces of companies. What about valuing those?
This one is going to be tough because it's, you know, there's a lot, when it's easy to value something, you can get a lot of experts in a room, and probably if there's 10 of them, more than five are going to go the same direction. This mm-hmm. one, you could have 10 different views in the room with 10 experts. Mm-hmm. From zero, it's worthless, to, you know, it's in hibernation. It's going to be worth a lot. It's just, there's an uncertainty right now, to those that believe, you know, those guys made good investments. They just got caught at a bad time in a run on a bank, and it wasn't their fault, which I'm assuming is Sam's preferred story. Is that, you know, if you guys hadn't ran and pulled all your deposits out, we wouldn't have been in this situation. I wouldn't have had to do what I did.
Is the volatility of the assets or the difficulty of valuing the assets, does that make this a pretty special bankruptcy case, or are there others like it?
I think this would make it one of the most difficult cases, is that the broader the range of views of value in a bankruptcy, the harder it is to get to a deal. I don't think there's anybody that could come buy all these assets or would right now. Maybe the crypto, you could put it into a bucket and say, well, look, there's transparency in the exchange. We can look at it on other exchanges. But I think there's going to be such a huge range of values for whatever's left that that's going to create a problem.
He had made $500 million investment in an AI company called Anthropic, $500 million. If you're running the bankruptcy, or you're running the company right now, how do you maximize the return on that? Like, how do you go about unloading a venture capital portfolio?
I would look to when Lehman went down, right? When you looked at Lehman's assets, you had to start to put them in three buckets, right? Assets that just sell them quick. They're melting ice cubes. They're going to go down in value. We just need to get them off our books. At the other end, you had assets that were so good and so readily available in pricing, there was a lot of demand for it, you just sold it. And then they ended up with a whole lot of stuff in the middle, which is, okay, it's not a melting ice cube, there's not a ready market for it, so we shouldn't just assume it's garbage until we should take some time and figure it out. Now, that's very expensive in bankruptcy, but that is a time when you got to separate the assets from the liabilities and say, hey, can we at least put them into a trust or something? And that was a problem with the... Going back to Weinstein, if you were trying to sell it under those conditions when everybody was, you know, pitchforks and torches, let's go burn everything that says the Weinstein on it, it was pretty hard to sell. Everybody was scared of it. You get 6 months away and people are like, everybody's watching Paddington Bear. It doesn't really matter. So it's the same kind of thing. Is there's a bit of a stigma. If I'm the professional sitting there looking at this saying, okay, I'd rather have the benefit of time. Let me get it away from the situation so that it doesn't get caught up in the contamination or the value drag of, well, anything that Alameda or Sam touched is now toxic. And so I think it has to go through, if the longer runway they can get, the better.
So you want to draw this out?
Again, it depends on the asset. That's why I told people, like, you don't. I mean, there are certain assets that, you know, if you're not investing in, if you're not taking care of it, if key people are leaving, if IP is walking out the door, like, it's one of the reasons I support the fact they filed bankruptcy quickly. But when you're coming about disposable assets, it's valuation 101, right? Which is, you want to sell when the seller has no compulsion to sell and the buyer has no compulsion to buy. That's the honest price, right? And so if you sell under duress or at a time of uncertainty, it's hard to get the best price. So if you really believe you have a winner, you want to create an environment where it gives you time. And creditors think that way too, which is, you know, they have different views of value. And they're like, well, I don't want you to sell it right now. Let's get through this and let's get that company stable and away from FTX, or away from Alameda in that case, right? And let's get it, some independent management in there and really see what it's worth. The sum of the parts here has to be greater than the whole, right? So this is not like Weinstein, where you can go, hey, just buy FTX, right? I mean, or just buy Alameda, right? Just come in and buy the whole thing.
No, you'd be like buying the contents of someone's attic or basement. Yeah. It's such a disparate collection of things.
Yeah, and you don't want to go with the, you know, storage unit approach. Like, hey, just buy whatever's in here. You know, some's good, some bad. But, I mean, this one, I got to believe that, not knowing much about Alameda, but if they made 20 investments, they should go out with basically a 20-part information memorandum that says, here's what they bought. Here's what it is. You have an opportunity to take their place in this position. What would you go for? Right.
And you'd look at those.
You look at those. And, you know, that's the issue that comes up with creditors and whatnot, because creditors are differently situated. There's creditors that just want to be paid off and want the nightmare to be over. And I want to go on to the next thing. And there's other creditors who know they're going to have an ongoing relationship with this company or some facet of the company. Right. They're owed money, but at the same time, maybe they have an exchange or they have an interest in exchange, and they're quasi-strategic in their interest.
What do you think will happen to FTX in the end? How you think this is going to play out over many, many, many years? Or do you think that it could be simpler than that?
I think you've got two pieces here, right? You got FTX, which was the exchange. me personally, I have to believe that business is dead. Mm. The people that run exchanges is based on the reputation of the exchange, is that it's an honest place in order for you to exchange goods. It's very transparent and everybody's playing by the same rules. And that's dead forever. The name FTX is, you might as well restart Lehman Brothers. It's been so tarnished and it's such a lack of confidence in what they did and what's happened, at least what people know. You know, if I'm running this thing, that's the first thing I'm going to do, which is, well, is there some architecture or structure that somebody did to create the legitimate exchange that if you were to change the name has real value? So could FTX live on in another form? Yes, because people need to trade. I can't keep track anymore of the number of digital currencies out there. So they need an honest exchange. Then you look at Alameda, and look, it was just a fund. So the fund's gone, but you know the investments they made, to your point, may have real value. And I'm sure that's going to be his defense is, look, these were valuable companies, and you can't say I committed a crime because at that certain point in time, the value of that's severely depressed. And they were venture capital, to your point. These were highly risky and highly speculative investments. Right? Venture, meaning new uncharted territory. So I do think a lot of those investments they made are probably still going to make it out. Now, if they never should have made them, they're probably problematic to begin with. I mean, I think what a lot of people seem to be saying is that he didn't really know what he was doing. So he was out investing in every scheme that crypto had available. And so you're going to have a lot of just absolute junk in here.
If you imagine us 10 years in the future, what kind of person is going to make a killing off the FTX bankruptcy?
And as I sit here today, I don't think it's going to be a good story because it's not like, you know, unless they get lucky, I don't see it being a phoenix coming from the ashes, right? I mean, it's going to be a very long slog to regain trust. Technical, you're going to earn the comeback of this. Right. So it's going to be somebody who buys it and takes a long time to say, OK, how do we earn back trust? How do we create real value in this exchange? And it's just going to take time to do. I don't think there's any quick, you know, hero story here that is going to emerge. And that's why I'd have no idea who wants to buy it, because this is going to be real work. And you're almost better off just starting a new exchange.
What about a quick hero story in the purchase of the $5 billion venture portfolio?
If you look at the $5 billion in investments, again, you'd have to go investment by investment. What is it that they invested in? Because there's a lot of useful things in blockchain and coins that are created that are creating real value. And if you were to come in when nobody wanted to touch it and buy it and stabilize it and carry it through, Alameda, right? There's probably a lot to work with. Right. Yeah. There's probably, but again, your first objective is to buy it and get it as far away from FTX as possible.
Right.
Right. It's almost like you don't want to admit where you found it. Where'd you buy that? It's through my banker. Right. No, because as soon as you say I bought it from FTX, like, oh, you sure it's not? It's just human tendency, right? It's just, it's the Scarlet A, if you will.
Yep. All right. So my producers dug up this quote. I think it's pretty funny that you said, people have called you an opportunistic capitalist, tombstone stealer, and raider. But you consider what you do to be effective altruism. Why?
Look, I really believe that, you know, that the world moves in cycles. You go up, you go down, right? You have good days and bad days. You live in a binary world. And so going out and saying, I want to find weak and underperforming assets and buy them and bring them back to where they should be, to me, is a very noble pursuit. But human tendency is when somebody succeeds to say, well, they must have cheated. They must have done something. And the more you succeed, the more you must have somehow done something that wasn't right. There are people that are like, shame on you for making money on the Weinstein Company. You came across and took advantage of the situation. You know, shame on you, right? I always said, if I wrote a book about my life, the opening line would be, no good deed goes unpunished. Right. Because I look at it as I bought an asset that thousands of people worked on to make movies and television shows. And then I took it from a position of almost going into the abyss and put it back into, you know, people are enjoying it. And, you know, the creditors did well and I paid more and assumed more than anybody else would do. But if you're the one that lost money and got wiped out, the guy who buys FTX and makes money is somehow evil.
I really appreciate you doing this for us.
No, it's good. Hopefully it's fun, and I'm excited.
Yeah, it was totally fun.
I'm excited to read this book.
It's a really fun book to write. All right. See you later.
All right, see you later.
Andy Mitchell is Managing Director of Lantern Asset Management, a private equity firm focused on business turnarounds and restructurings. On Background is hosted by me, Michael Lewis, and produced by Catherine Girardeau and Lydia Jean Kopp. Our editor is Julia Barton. Our engineer is Sarah Bruguer. Jake Flanagan helps us with licensing. Our show is recorded by Topher Ruth at Berkeley Advanced Media Studios. Our music was composed by Matthias Bossi and John Evans of Stellwagen Symphonette. Owen Miller published each and every episode. On Background is a production of Pushkin Industries. Don't forget that we have the website atrpodcast.com in case you want to send me a question or a complaint or anything else. That's atrpodcast.com. Watch this feed for the launch of the next season of Against the Rules. Until then, to find more Pushkin podcasts, listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you'd like to listen ad-free and learn about other exclusive offerings, don't forget to sign up for Pushkin Plus subscription at pushkin.fm/plus or on our Apple show page.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.